What's going on, everybody? We're back for another episode of the Rockets Collective. I missed last week, so it's definitely good to be back. But joining us again, we have Kelly Eco, we have Bice Houston Will. Ali Khan cannot be with us today, but he will be back soon, of course. We have to thank you guys for 1,000 subs. That happened so quick, only like 6 episodes in. So much love, of course. So if you're tuning in for the first time, definitely leave a sub, leave a like, and leave a comment on the discussion, because we definitely want to hear what you guys have to say. But yeah, man, it's that part of the offseason where not much is happening. But today we actually got a Houston Rockets signing. Josh Okogie signed on a 1-year deal for $3.1 million with the Houston Rockets. So we'll just start it off. Let's kick it to Kelly. Kelly, man, what do you think about the signing?
Kelly, your mic,
cannot
your mic.
Hear, cannot hear Mr. Eco.
Rains.
You good. While you fix it, we kick it to Wills. And then we'll get it together. Go ahead.
It was muted. My fault. It was muted. My mic was muted.
You good, bro?
Go ahead. It's a real sensitive mic. It's a new mic. So
you good.
On the surface, when you look at Josh Okogie, it was a bit surprising. I didn't think that was really an area of need for Houston, especially when you consider, if you look at their current depth chart, they're a bit thin at shooting guard. If you go to play the traditional basketball roles, and after losing Cam, after losing Jalen, there's not a lot of depth outside of, Amen Thompson now at shooting guard, unless you want to, slot Tari down or move Reed up. I thought they would go out and get an actual, shooting guard, but it seems like they opted for more defensive versatility and length. It seems like Ime is going to double down on the size he has and wants to be as defensively deep and versatile as possible. So I guess Josh makes sense. I mean, he's not a great shooter. His defense has kind of slipped in the last couple of years. But if it's going to be a depth piece, at the end of the rotation, it's not really much you can, say to discredit it. So it's a pretty good sign, I guess.
I hear you. Will, what do you think?
I think it's a whole lot of nothing. that's how I feel about it. It's just a depth signing. It's just one of those things where, they had a roster spot they had to fill out. They had to get to the 14-player threshold. So they gave a player who is like an Ime guy, to the definition, right? He's someone who is a really good defender. And he's somebody who takes pride on that end and plays hard every second he's on the court. And that's kind of the kind of guys that Ime Udoka likes to play. As Kelly, pointed out, he's not necessarily the world's best shooter. And he is very limited as an offensive player. That's one of the main reasons why his market wasn't the greatest and why he's on a vet minimum deal, probably going to be the 14th man on this team. But I will say, there are NBA players on rosters who are worse than Josh Okogie. So it's not it's not like we just signed a bum. It's just he's just not going to play that much. And in the scenario where Josh Okogie is playing, something's gone awfully wrong. So, it's kind of just nothing to me.
I'll say this. He definitely fits the team identity. I tweeted about it a few times. He's 6'4", 7-foot wingspan. He's now the 10th player on the roster with a 7-foot wingspan or longer. Every player the Rockets acquired this offseason, 7-foot wingspan or higher. So Ime Udoka has a clear plan. He wants to get a ton of length on the defensive end, and Okogie definitely brings that. I had to look up his numbers. Last year he played in Phoenix and in Charlotte. I mean, he had a 3.9 steal percentage. That's for his position, per clean the glass, 100th percentile. In the blocks, he averaged 1.5% per possession. That's 91 percentile. So, I mean, again, really good defender, as y'all mentioned, not the best shooter. Last year was 34.8% from three, similar to Jayson Tate. So he's kind of in that Jayson Tate tier of players. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's just a competitive acquisition that the Rockets got. He's not going to be playing big minutes by any means, but if it comes down to him playing, he's not, a liability by any means. He's going to fit right into what Ime Udoka and the Houston Rockets want to do, which is play defense, lock up, and get to the other side of the court. So I'm not mad at the signing. Go ahead.
There was something that Will talked about, and it was a joke, but, if they're playing Josh, something has gone wrong. So I guess my question is, because they have so much depth now, if you're viewing them, how would you think that they should go about using their depth? In the case of they have 3 games in 4 nights, or the occasional 5 and 7, how do you think they should use their depth because they have so many numbers that can play different positions now?
I'll answer that question. For me, it's a lot of, like, one, we talked about a lot. I am load managing Kevin Durant, Fred VanVleet, and Steven Adams. Like, those three guys, for sure, I don't want them playing all 82 games. I don't want them – well, you know, maybe Fred can play back-to-backs, but Steven Adams, Katie, don't want y'all playing back-to-backs, none of that. So, like, we are going to have to rely upon our depth at, you know, different points of time throughout the season. I think for, like, KD, for example, it's a bit easier to kind of imagine how we'll assimilate his production, because we do have just the work. Like, we do, we have the most wings in the league right now. I think
for sure. I don't even need to look it up. They definitely do.
They got a bunch of them. Yeah,
they got a bunch. Like, Amin can play a lot of guard this year, but he's a capable wing. Obviously, Tari and Bari, DFS just got signed. Jay Sean Tate still here. Jeff Green still here. Josh Okogie still here. And so, like, the reason why I say Josh Okogie plays is probably something's going wrong, because I didn't even say, did I say Jay Sean Tate? I don't think I said Jay Sean Tate. Like, no. Tate is a guy who I think will probably get some burn on those nights when KD does, you know, want to load manage or whatnot. And so, like I said, for Josh Okogie to play, that probably means, like, Tate is hurt. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that at that point, like, I don't know. We got a lot of problems. So, let me not say that, because maybe he goes in training camp and he's really good and, you know, we feel differently. But based on what we know today, I think that's kind of how that would shake out. With Fred, it's a bit more difficult, because outside of Reed, there really isn't any other backup. I mean, Aaron Holiday, you know, he's here. And I assume those guys will kind of step up. But it's we're not as insulated on the guard play as we are with the wing depth. And obviously with the center depth as well, because, you know, Clint Capella is someone who can kind of come in and play those center minutes. And then Jabari's played small ball five. Jeff Green's played small ball five. If you really wanted to, you could play KD at the five. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's different. It's so many different things you can do in that department. So that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, I'll say this. You know, the Rockets, with this acquisition, you know, everyone's asking. We had a comment talking about, you know, what's going on with the guard play. And I saw, you know, Jackson Galley tweeted out today, you know, the Rockets have a ton of faith in Reed Shepard this upcoming year. Look, they really have three guards on the roster, unless you want to count Amin Thompson. I think he's going to be off a ton. My mic just fell. I just got a new mic. I'm sorry about that. But, yeah, like, I'm curious to see, you know, what they do if there's struggles at the guard position. Because, one, again, Amin's going to be getting those reps. But if, say, Reed or Fred go down, I'm just curious to see what happens. I know if anyone gets hurt or anyone's load managing from the wing spot, the Rockets are going to be good. They got wings for days. I just looked. Well, they have like 7-8 wings. So that probably is the most in the league. But, yeah, it's really going to come down to guard depth for the Houston Rockets. And if they don't have any issues injury-wise when it comes to guards, they're going to be chilling. Give me 60 wins. They're going to be chilling.
Damn.
So, I mean, yeah, no, I really do think so. Because when they first, you know, had this offseason, they get KD, they trade, you know, Dylan and Jalen. I'm like, okay, damn, we kind of low on wings. Like, we just lost DB. But, boom, you pick up DFS. You pick up Josh Okogie. They're chilling now. Like, oh, bro, they got hella depth. And that's all you need in this league. When you have a good team and you have depth to back it up when people are out, that's how you keep it pushing. It's very important in the regular season, especially in the West, when you're going to need that home court advantage. So I personally, I think they can – I don't think they'll be the one seed now, but I think they can really win like 60 games if most things go right. Someone said our small ball five ain't really small. Not at all. But, Kelly, what did you think to your own question?
Go ahead.
You know, it really depends on – because obviously we've seen 2 years of Ime and how he likes to handle – the players that he trusts and the fact that he will put a lot on their shoulders, guys like Fred, you know, guys like Amin Thompson. So I'm not sure if they plan to like stagger some of their guards to maybe lessen the overall load, because that could be a thing that they could do to, you know, keep everyone fresh, give guys looks with different lineups, because they have so many different combinations that they can throw out there. It would behoove the coaching staff to kind of experiment early on and see, you know, how does Dorian play well with Jabari, or does Dorian play better with Tari, or how does Reed play with Clint, stuff like that. You have enough options to where you can almost pick and choose. And if you do it correctly, you should be able to preserve the majority of health. Obviously, there are some things you can account for in injuries and some freak accidents. But for the most part, they have enough players and bodies on the roster to keep things fresh and light. And, you know, if you're trying to have a goal for the playoffs, maybe you don't have to, you know, go all the way in the regular season, because, like, Fred wants to preserve himself. Steven Adams wants to preserve himself. I'm sure Ime, now having seen what the rigors of regular season can do to a young team, maybe you want to take things a little bit easier in bits and parts. So there are ways to manage, to load manage the group as a whole, just because you have, you know, 12, 13, 14 guys that can play.
I wanted to address one of the questions basically about why you can't put it on screen, Brad. I know you was looking for it. Why we want less guards. And it's, bro, and like, I feel like I'm a broken record when I say it. So I want to say for the last like three episodes, I've said this exact same thing. Who is the guard? Like that has been what I have been trying to get people to tell me. Who is the guard that y'all want the Rockets to sign? That's like I said, that's going to play. If you're talking about like, you know, like for example, like De'Anthony Melton, right? That's an MSL photo out there. Like, he's a guard, and you could sign up for the vet men, but De'Anthony Melton's not playing. He's not getting minutes over any of the guys that, you know, that are in a rotation normally. And so for me, like I said, the criteria for the guard conversation is can the guy be acquired at this point on the vet minimum? Because that's what the Rockets are working with. They're working with just vet mins right now. And honestly, with the Okogie signing, I think if we signed somebody else, y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, we would go into the first apron now. I think they would have to get rid of somebody's contract.
They're pretty tight.
Yes. I think that, like, pretty much, like, basically what you guys can do is we'd have to get rid of somebody, right? But, okay, now you get, let's say we did have that roster spot available for someone. It's a vet minimum who's going to play, right? And my question is just, none of these guys who were available were going to. Josh Okogie's not playing. So, like, that's why I'm not looking at this like it's a situation of, oh, because we signed Okogie, we're, you know, debt to all guards. Like, none of the guards we're going to sign, we're going to play. Like, the type of guard that we're asking for is not signing a vet minimum deal. And to me, that's kind of where, like, I kind of want people to, like, when they say what the guards we want, like, who is the guard that y'all want them to sign? Because he doesn't exist.
Yeah, so, you know, I see the question about the route with less guards. So a couple, I guess during summer league, there were a few names that I posed to the Rockets in terms of, hey, everyone knows that you guys should probably use another guard. Would you consider a player like a Seth Curry, a player like a Malcolm Brogdon, just in theory? And the answer I got was, yes, those are players that fit the mold of what they would like, but the problem is, when you're at this point in the season, in the offseason, the only kind of players that you are looking to bring in are guys that are comfortable with taking a role that's at the end of the bench, right? This is late July. Most teams have their business sorted out already. So if you're looking to add in a 14th guy, a 13th guy, he's got to be comfortable with playing spot minutes. And I'd imagine that Seth Curry or Malcolm Brogdon still thinks they have a lot of basketball left in them. Now, it takes two to tango. So if those guys are not going to be interested in, you know, coming for a bit part role, it does make sense if you're going to transition to a wing heavy league in terms of bigger players, guys that can switch more, guys that are more versatile. If you've watched the Thunder, if you watch the Indiana Pacers, a lot of their games is based on versatility and size and being able to switch, you know, one through different positions and just toggle different matchups. So in a vacuum, it does make sense why Ime has gone heavy on the wings, just because you want to have as many bodies as possible. It seems like they're gearing up for the playoffs already. And if you're a forward-thinking franchise, having already seen the data from last year's postseason run, or the first round, you understand now what's at stake and how to best course correct moving forward. So I guess that would be why you would go that route and get more wings as possible.
Like,
y'all can hear me, right?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, yeah, my mic fell. Let's make sure I'm straight. Go ahead, Will.
You're good. I'll say somebody said Alec Burks, and like I think he's a fine player, but to me, he's just not going to play over any of our guys. Like, I think we underestimate in this conversation how deep the Houston Rockets are. We are an extremely deep basketball team. Like, no funny, bro. Reed Sheppard is probably going to be like the eighth man, right? Because I don't even know how we don't. Kelly, if you have some insight, I don't even know who the fifth starter is going to be just yet, who the sixth man, seventh man. I'd assume that's some combination of, like, Tari, Barry, and DFS. And those are all 25-plus-a-minute guys, typically. And so, like, if two of those guys are coming off of your bench, you don't have that many minutes left to give in general. And you got to give Steven Adams a lot of minutes because he's really good. giving Reed Shepard a lot of minutes. He's the number three overall pick. Right. Like, there's just not that many minutes left for guys to play. And so for me, it's just like asking for a guard. It has to be someone who will crack that rotation. And that guy is not signing for a vet minimum. So, like, to me, it's kind of a non-factor.
Yeah.
And I'll reiterate what you guys are saying, because Will said this a few podcasts ago. Amen Thompson, you know, Amen Thompson, once he became a starter, Udoka, and you can look at the numbers, like, he was leading the league, if not top three, in minutes played per game. Yeah. So he's going to be playing a ton of minutes at the guard position. We don't even have to discuss, not Reed Shepard, but Fred VanVleet. We know he's playing heavy minutes. That's a consistent theme with Ime Udoka. Right. And now we just have to see where Reed, you know, falls into the pecking order in that three-man guard rotation. So, yeah, they don't necessarily need another one. To, as we've been discussing, if one person goes down, then what happens? You know, you have Aaron Holiday, again, good shooter. I don't necessarily want him on ball. But when he comes in, he plays a good role. We saw him play some good minutes against Golden State. Again, not ideal, not a guy you want to, you know, run heavy minutes through, but that's not his role. You know, I like what he does when he comes onto the court. He knows what he's doing. So, yeah, it makes sense that they don't go guard. As Kelly mentioned, you want to match up against who you're going to be playing against in the playoffs. The West is tough, and they have a bunch of versatile teams. You have OKC, as you mentioned, and they have a bunch of size and wings, and now the Rockets have size and wings to match that. So I get exactly what Houston is doing. And they're going to be able to do I won't say they will do better than OKC, but I mean, they can really be a top two, if not the best defense in the NBA this upcoming year. And that's all you need when you want to compete. So, yeah, that's the identity they have, and they're sticking with it, and they're going to quadruple down on it. And that's what we saw today with the Okogie signing. So I personally don't mind it. But if they do, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, if they sign someone else, like, they're at the first apron right now. Like, if they have to cut Nate Williams.
They have to make more wiggle room if they wanted to sign anybody else. They're unless it's a two-way guy, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't think they're, yeah. See, I think they're done today. If anything, in the offseason, we'll see a Tari Eason extension, if that, and then, you know, the KD extension. But, yeah, I don't think they're getting anybody
else. They're still waiting on Dante. I know they tendered the offer to make him restricted, but from the last I heard, he was still trying to see his options around and see, you know, if another team had a bigger role or something like that. But they want him back, but as far as the two, I think you have three two-way guys. So he would be another guy along with Kevon Harris, and then you probably have room for one more.
Yeah. So I personally don't see too much going on. What do you have to say, Will?
Somebody said Jalen and Dylan were top 3 minutes. And I mean, that's correct, but I don't know. I feel like we somehow forget that we have Kevin Durant whenever we talk about these things. Like, a lot of those minutes that was going to Jalen are about to go to KD. And then I think DFS also gets underrated in this conversation. I think he's kind of the Dylan Brooks replacement in this situation. So a lot of the minutes that were going to go to Dylan, I think, are going to be divided up between Jabari, Tari, and DFS. I'd imagine those are like the next three guys in the rotation after Fred, Amin, Shingun, and KD.
Yeah, there's not a lot of minutes to go around. It was slim pickings as it was, and now it's just like they have 12 guys that can have a claim to, you know, a rotational spot. So, yeah, it's good. They're tight. They're tight right now.
Yeah, they definitely are. Yeah, guys, we'll be answering any questions you guys have in the comments. So if y'all throw them out, we'll definitely check them out. I want to know who you guys think will be our sixth man. The Rockets have so much depth. I don't even know if they'll necessarily have a sixth man, but most minutes off the bench, I guess it'll depend on who they start. Will mentioned it. You know, I don't necessarily think I agree with you. I don't necessarily think that fifth starter spot is necessarily locked in right now. You have Jabari, you have DFS, you have Tari Eason. Any one of those guys that comes off the bench could be technically a sixth man. I could see any one of those three playing the most minutes off the bench, depending on who starts and who doesn't. What would y'all say though?
So if you were to look at, I guess, a super early look at Houston's depth chart, right now I would put Jabari in there because obviously he's coming off of a 5-year contract. There was a moment, and this is kind of fun. So there was a moment where I wrote something up to the effect of Houston was trying to make a push towards older, more experienced players. And I got some pushback from the team about that, because trying to say that, you know, the core was still going to be playing a lot, talking about Jabari, Amen, and Alpi. So I think if you're looking at it from that lens, then you would put Jabari in there for now. I will say that training camp is going to be super competitive. Dorian Finney-Smith is an experienced guy. He's a proven guy. Tari Eason has had a lot to prove this season, for sure. And if there is no quote-unquote sixth man, I think what Ime could do is kind of how we saw last season, where he would bring Tari and Jabari kind of close together off the bench. It might be a Tari and Dorian thing, and then you allow Fred to stay on the court a bit longer. Then you bring in Reed to see if he can, you know, run the offense, and if he can't, let a man run it or bring Fred back, run through Alpi more. So I don't think there's a quote-unquote sixth man, because traditionally the sixth man that we think of in the NBA is someone that comes off the bench and gets a lot of points up, you know, can facilitate, be that tweener, three-level scorer. Houston doesn't have that off the bench. They have a bunch of wings, what you guys have been talking about. So maybe you do a plug and play where you just swap out the wings and put Dorian and Tari or whoever's hot start the game, and then you bring in Reed, and then you kind of have your core eight. Then I forgot about Steven. Then you got to bring – they got a bunch of players, man. So it's kind of hard to iron out a quote-unquote sixth man, but I think they're going to have sixth men in Tari and Dorian. That's what I would say.
Let's do an experiment, and y'all in the chat can play along too.
Go ahead.
Of Jabari, Tari, because I think we all agree that Jabari, Tari, and DFS are probably – like I said, that's one of those guys is probably the fifth starter – and then whichever ones don't become the starter are probably going to be the first guys off the bench. I think we would all – maybe Steven Adams is in that conversation. But right. Those are probably those three guys, right? Of those three guys, who would you say is the best – rank those guys defensively, one through three. Who would you say is the best defender of that group?
Between the three guys we're discussing, right? Tari DFS, Barry, and Jabari. DFS.
Who's the best defender of that group? Rank them.
I would go right now – DFS is a good defender. I want to see what it looks like in Houston's group, but I'll go.
I'm going Dorian first. Just
I think I wanted to go Dorian, Tari, Jabari. But Jabari, yeah. What he brings from a rebounding perspective, yeah, is different than what those other two bring.
I'm gonna go. Somebody put. I think it's me person. Tari, DFS, Bari. That's my three. But okay, I think everybody had Bari last, and we had Tari and DFS in one combination of one or two. My next question is rank those two guys. I'm sorry, rank those three guys in terms of shooting ability.
Dorian, Jabari, Tari.
Tari. Yeah, I agree.
That's
exactly
what I would say.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we just did the experiment. Dorian was the best shooter, and he was at the lowest, the second best defender, but y'all had him as the best. You know what I'm saying? That might be the guy who gets the spot. You know what I'm saying? Like that, we just did the experiment, you know? So.
And I'll say this. I liked Jabari when he came off the bench last season because he was able to look for his shot a lot more. You know, I don't really see him getting a bunch of low post looks if he's going to be starting with KD. Kelly, you can tell me if I'm wrong, if you think I'm wrong. But he was really able to look for a shot a lot more off the bench. And I kind of like that about him when he was coming off the bench. And of course, he still brings that same, you know, thing. He's very switchable. He's going to be running that zone with Steve-O for sure. He's going to be a high impact guy wherever he is. But off the bench, I kind of like him because he's more aggressive on offense. And again, what you get with Dorian in the starting lineup in this scenario, you got the 3-point shooting. And of course, we all know he's a really good defender and he's a good rim protector as well for a forward. So I personally wouldn't mind Dorian starting. You know, Tari, even though we talked about it a million times, you know, they had like a 12-0 stretch last year when he was starting. But again, you know, the 3-point shooting, he has to kind of increase the volume when he starts, and he's still not the best 3-point shooter. So unless he sees, you know, an increase in percentage there, I'm cool with him off the bench, and he's a high impact player regardless too. But well, that's a good experiment, simplify it for sure. But yeah, I would be cool with anything, but I'm cool with Barry off the bench too.
Yeah,
Kel, you agree with that? I mean, off the experience.
So I think if you want to talk about the good things that Jabari brings, obviously he's still an average shooter right now, slightly above average defender. The plus rebounding, I think, is what might give him the edge, because if you're looking at their second unit, when he brings in Steven Adams and plays that double big, that's primarily, you know, the reason for doing that, the rebounding, second chance opportunities. If they play well on zone, that's an added bonus. But Dorian, I think it might be a fluid thing, honestly. Like, if I was a coaching, I would make it fluid. Like, there are some games where Jabari probably needs to start, and there are probably some games that Dorian needs to start because, you know, Dorian is such a great floor spacer that you simply can't ignore that aspect that he brings to the table, considering the Rockets struggled so much in that aspect last season. But, you know, Jabari's younger. He's probably more malleable. You probably want to see how he develops now that you gave him $120 million. So you probably want to see him in a bigger role. But going back to what you guys said, when he did come off the bench last season, he was aggressive at times. I think in the playoffs, he probably could have been a bit more. But he looked for a shot at the times that they went zone, and he was able to find the mid-range pull-up, and he was probably, you know, one of the better players in that series. I want to see now, after you commit so much money to him, what does year four look like for him? And I think coming into training camp, you know, if he's given the edge to start, he's going to have Dorian on his heels for weeks and months, because this is a guy he's played at a very high level. You saw what he did whenever he came to Los Angeles. He immediately was the biggest plus minus guy for that stretch after he came over from Brooklyn. And while he was in Brooklyn, he was still in the 85th or higher percentile in plus minus. So he is a difference maker. And if you're looking at a guy that quote unquote would be an Ime guy, it would be a Dorian Finney-Smith type player. So it's going to be a lot of pressure on Jabari to perform, because if you don't, this is a deep team that has guys that can come in if you're not playing well. So it's a good problem. It's a good problem to have. So I think good teams don't have to always have, you know, solidified starters. Hell, we saw the Thunder at one point. They brought in Casey Wallace. They brought Isaiah off the bench. Obviously, that didn't work. They had to go back to that. But just to have that option is a good problem to have. So I think going into training camp, you should be pretty fluid with your options.
Yeah, and Kelly, as you mentioned, you know, high plus minus guy. Dude was the Lakers were 17 points better with him on the court.
Yeah,
you know, last year versus when he was off. So yeah, when you play one of those elite teams, and you know, maybe Jabari's not working in the starting lineup, you can quickly switch that out with DFS, and you're good to go. So yeah, a great problem to have.
He might be like a playoff starter. Like if I was to do it, he probably let Jabari, you know, play the majority of the regular season, then the playoffs, you would go to Dorian, and they both have experience coming off the bench and starting. So
yeah, that was my question. I was going to say, if you're playing OKC, who would you start? So yeah you answered it right there.
Yeah, Dorian.
Real quick before I can start me right. So I think
go ahead, bro. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. So while y'all were talking, I started looking up some numbers, and I was
really quick. I saw your facial expression when you probably pulled.
I'll say I was really bro. When I was like, this is much better than I thought it was. Tar Eason started 16 games for the Rockets this season. They were 12-4 in those 16 games. And he averaged, I'm gonna round up and round down here, 15 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 2 assists per game, 2 steals per game, 1 block per game. And this is why I made that face, on 60 true shooting. I was like, I did not know it was that efficient.
What was the 3-point shooting? Was it 32%?
It was 32. So it was on 4 attempts, 32, which is obviously not the best. But also, it's pretty encouraging that it was 60 true shooting and his 3-point percentage was kind of low. It's something we know he's working on this summer. But so then that encouraged me to then go look at everybody else. Compare that to Tari off the bench. He averaged 11 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, an assist per game, two steals per game, a block per game on 55 true shooting. So his numbers actually go down as a starter. This is the interesting thing, though. Jabari Smith Jr. as a starter this year averaged 12 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, an assist per game, not a full steal, a block on 54 true shooting. Interesting. When he comes off of the bench, Brad, he averages his points. Everything goes up, surprisingly. He is now at 13 points per game, 8 rebounds per game, an assist per game, a steal per game. He's not averaging a full block anymore. But his efficiency goes from, 54 to 61.
he was elite off the bench.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, that made me then go look at what DFS looked like. And DFS as a starter last year was 9 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, not a full block on 60 true shooting. And then, off the bench, funny if it actually went up too. Off the bench, it was 8 points per game, 4 rebounds per game, an assist per game, a steal per game, not a full block on 62 true shooting. So, Funny enough, the guy who plays the best of these guys as a starter is Tari. To me, it's the definition of like a good problem to have, that you have three different guys who could, in theory, be your fifth starter, and like the team would be better for it. So
I was going to say, I think Kelly made a good point when, you know, if you bring Jabari off the bench, a big thing with Houston, when Jabari is out the lineup, they lose a ton of rebounding. We saw that when he went down in January. Right. But, you know, as we saw with the double big after, you know, March 4th against the Pacers, when they started going Steve-O and Shangoon, again, they were 12-4 after that stretch. Boom, they get every single rebound. So I understand the point Kelly makes when, okay, you start Jabari so you don't suffer too much in the rebounding department. I'd be curious to see. I mean, if you have Tari in the starting lineup, I'm sure it's not.
I was going to say, so Tari in less minutes as a starter actually averages more rebounds. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say the reason why it got so bad when Jabari went to the bench is because, and no disrespect, y'all know I love Dylan Brooks, but Dylan, he doesn't
rebound like
that. That was the thing. And we're functionally playing Dylan at the power forward when Jabari was on the bench, because he would guard the bigger wings, and he would guard like Wimby and stuff, and then the Mim would guard the quicker point guards and like the Lucas of the world, right? So you're functionally playing Dylan at the four, and when your power forward isn't rebounding, like that takes a hit. So I think it's one thing. Another interesting thing to say is just Tari, like I said, in less minutes is actually averaging more rebounds, which is interesting to say. But
So the reason why I think for Jabari, like if he's out there, it's not so much of the rebounds that he gets, it's the boxing out that he does that allows an Amen to grab a rebound or a KD. So I do understand why, because you know Tari's crazy. He just go crash the glass, he'll dive, sacrifice his body for the ball. He doesn't care. So I do understand that. I just want to see how much they leverage, you know, the double big, because it really comes down to how much they want to play the double big, right? Like if they want to lean into it a ton, then maybe you can play Jabari less because you do have the rebounding with Steven and Alpi, or Steven and Capella, or however you want to do it. But it comes down to how you, you know, put that next to what you do gain in having a Jabari. Because if Jabari becomes a 37-38% shooter from three, it makes playing him a lot more palatable in terms of over Dorian if he's given the same floor spacing and being a plus rebounder. But like you said, it's going to be a good problem to have. If you're a Houston right now, you shouldn't have anything ironed out per se. You should allow those guys to play it out in training camp and let those decisions come as it may, because these are all guys that are could be competing for what they believe is going to be a finals run this year. So that should bring out the best basketball in all of them. So it is a good situation to see who actually rises to the top of that situation.
Before I get to Sangoon's question, do y'all remember when we were begging the Rockets to have wings? We had no defensive wings in this rebuild. It was probably before they drafted Jabari and Tari, but man, we were down bad. We didn't have a single defensive wing, and now it seems like we have a million. So again, as we've been talking about, it's a great problem to have. Sangoon is asking Kelly, he's begging you to answer this, so we'll give you the floor. Is there an update on the Tari Eason extension? He did kind of mention it earlier in the show, but I'll let him say it again.
I haven't heard anything. I know you saw him tweet something a couple of days ago to the effect of, what was the tweet saying? Just keep on working or keep working hard. And yeah, like I haven't had any updates on the Tari extension. I just think that when you look at it from a leverage standpoint, you know, the Rockets did all their business in the span of like a 2-3 week period. And, you know, if they're heading into the season wanting to see more from him, or kind of putting the ball in his court and seeing how he performs to give him the extension, I certainly think he's deserving of an extension now. But if you look at their financial situation, it's kind of tricky. They're at the apron right now. You don't have a ton of wiggle room. Obviously, they have his bird rights, so they could go over the cap to sign him, whatever. But if it behooves you to kind of wait until next season or next offseason to kind of come back to the table and give him an offer, then I could see them, why they would go that route. But you know, as of right now, I don't know. It's pretty quiet right now on that front.
Yeah, I'll say this. I don't know if Tari gets extended, but I do know for sure Houston is not trying to get rid of him.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be here long term. I've heard Yeah. I've heard the Petitas talk about him. I don't think he's going anywhere.
So. No, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be a Rocket for a pretty long time. But yeah. At the end of the day, it's a business and it's a numbers game. So, you know, the Rockets are pretty hard capped in terms of their flexibility. They're trying to hang on right now. So it's all going to come down to, like I said, it's a leverage thing and the numbers thing. So you have to let the business play out how it does and then see what happens at the end of the table.
Yeah, I wanted to say this, and then we can get to some more questions. I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know if you guys saw it. Fred Van Fleet, you know, flew out to Turkey, and he's working out with Şengün out there. He's the first Rockets teammate I've seen fly out to Turkey to work out with Şengün. So I thought that was really cool. So big props to him. I think he's an A-plus leader and vet. You know, he just got the NBA PA. He's been boxing with Udoka. You know, he's working out with, you know, LP out there. He's doing everything this offseason, so. I got to give props to him, especially, you know, taking $20 million less from the team option to his new extension. So I had to give him his props really quick. But we had a question about Fred. We kind of dove into it slightly, but we can do a more in-depth combo on it. How will the Rockets survive if KD or Fred VanVleet get hurt? Or can we survive a third or half of the season with one of them missing? I'll let Will, if you want to answer that one first, I can go right after.
If both of them get hurt, the season is over. So, like, it's that simple. Like, it's nothing you can do at that point. But I think if one of them goes down, obviously, the playoffs, both of them are going to need to be there. But, like, in the regular season, I think we can survive stretches without both of them. I think we have the depth to insulate losing one of them. I think both of them for extended periods of time, I think the season's over.
I'll say this. I think ideally, this season would be cooked, but they might be able to hold off. Let's say both are out. Maybe I'm being biased. I probably am being biased. But let's say they're both out. You got Amen Thompson at the one. Who are you throwing at the two? You probably just have to go super.
So you got to go DFS.
You probably went DFS or Taurus Jabari and then Şengün. Then they just go double big heavy again. They have the defensive identity. They gonna just be locking up. They just gotta.
I say we just won't score, but you'll say you won't score either. So
be like 91 to 88 type of game.
It's gonna be 80 to 75.
That's nasty. Yeah. I mean, if Fred goes down, it really forces you to, as a staff, you have to kind of alter how you run the offense, and you probably need to run more through LP anyway, because he's developing at a rapid rate. And you kind of want to, if you want to really dive into the comparisons to Jokic, you probably want to put more on his plate in terms of being that offensive hub and allowing plays to run off of him. And, you know, obviously the same with the men, like you want to develop him as a ball handler. He's a natural guard anyway. So allowing him to run the offense more wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. And then you still have Reed, you know, who you put a lot on the offseason hopes on in terms of taking that next step as a young player. So if Fred was to miss time, maybe they're in a better spot now to hold the fort. If KD goes down, I mean, it's a big loss, because you shifted your whole timeline based on this guy coming to your team right now. And if he's gone, you are back to square one in terms of figuring out how to score in the half court, figuring out how to have a go-to guy. And then you go back to the equal opportunity offense thing was a mess last season. So, if they were to miss one, obviously Fred is the one that if he was to be out, they would be bit, like they could survive. But if they miss him and KD, yeah, you can just go check the Vegas odds for next season, because that's just done.
I was going to say, the Rockets, you know, if Fred is out, as Kelly said, they'll probably be able to survive. But if Fred is out, like, that team, everyone on that team is going to be 6-7 and up outside of Reed coming off the bench. So I think they'll probably dominate. They're already going to dominate in the rebounding department. But, I mean, the amount of size that they'll have out there regardless is going to be crazy. But if Fred's out, it's going to be absurd. Teams are going to hate playing Houston. But, yeah, losing both definitely would suck. I don't think KD is going to be out, you know, half of the season. But, you know, he's load managing, of course. And as we've talked about, Houston has the depth to overcome that right. In the wing department. Probably the most, as I've said, the most wings in the league at this point. So, yeah, that was a good question. I appreciate you, DJ, for throwing that in there. I'm looking for other questions we have now. And let's see. Did anyone cop the Twin Slam shirt? I'll say this. Shout out to Amin. You know, he's on the Slam cover. A lot of people wanted him on the Slam cover when Houston was up there. It was Dylan and Fred with Shane Goon and Jalen. And people were like, man, where's Amin at? You know, they were saving the Twin edition. So, yeah, I have not copped anything yet. I know, Will, did you cop the last one that Rockets got?
And I probably won't be getting this one because that other one came so badly. So
bad look.
Oh man, it was that's some vintage.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, it is, sure.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Twins, though.
Yeah, shout out to them. Yeah, it's good merch. I saw Amin said, they were talking about who was gonna win the chip, and Amin was, I think Asar was like, "Yeah, we're going to." Amin was like, "Yeah, bro, you're not on the Rockets, so I don't know how that's gonna happen." So. I like that guy's a dog.
I really want to see, speaking of Amin, what that next year looks like, because we've seen the work he's been doing this summer, trying to perfect that ball handle and that jump shooting form. I'm always curious to wonder how players adjust going from working with, you know, one shooting coach in Ben Sullivan to another one, like, because it's not the same teachings, and I wonder if that can get confusing at times. But overall, from an experience standpoint, he's in a perfect spot to take that next leap, because we saw what he did last season, finishing first team all defense, really taking, you know, the opportunity with both hands and taking his career to another stratosphere. So if he comes into next season with a more refined handle and a slightly better jumper, I think Houston is in for a lot of success, because this guy is electric. I mean, there's nothing he can't do with the basketball from an athletic standpoint. It's just about, you know, the nuances of the game in terms of, you know, reading defenses and creating your shot, creating for others. But I think he's on the right track, and I think he probably is the Houston's X factor going into next season.
I want to say this about Amin Thompson. I'm going to ask you guys a question. I want y'all to answer in the comments too. Do y'all think Amin takes a top 25 leap this year? We know he has the work ethic. He's been working with, you know, the guard whisperer, and now he's with another trainer right now. He's going to be doing that the entire offseason, but it's very possible. What do y'all think he can take a top 25?
Top 25. Like top 25 player? No, not.
I would say the 25,
that's a lot.
I was going to say, I actually very recently did this exercise for the Right Read, and I listed my top. I think I got to like 23 before I called it today. He's not going to be top. Like, unless he takes a crazy leap, bruh.
So I saw Swiper Cam thinks he'll be top 40.
He said 40, and I think that's pretty, like, I think it'll be
top
probably
30. He can get 30.
Yeah,
30
to 35. That's about as high as he'll get this year.
Okay. And that being said, him being that much better, I mean, this year he was probably already top 50, but I definitely think he improves. Again, last year he was top 50. You would say he was 50 for sure, Will? Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, last year.
And last year, again, as a starter, averaged 16, 9, 5, 1.5, 1.5, 61 true shooting percentage. That's elite right there. Like, I think he really does improve even more. And I meant to discuss this, say, if, you know, Fred goes down. Amin is, again, we have two all-stars out there still, and now they're just surrounded by just long defensive players. Again, it'll just come down to shooting. But, yeah, Amin is going to be the real difference maker on this team. Of course, it's Kevin Durant. But Amin, I think he really takes that leap. And that's going to make the biggest difference for the Rockets this year. That's me personally. Kelly, someone asked you a question higher up.
Yeah, please get that question, because that was a good one.
Which one was it? Well, you talking about the he was throwing a bunch of questions. As we look for it.
No. Kelly, the 8:14 p.m. from today, 32.
Okay. Kel, when you interview players or interview people, who do you laugh at the most? Or what do you laugh with the most?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably Fred, but Fred be on my ass. So I was like, Fred is hilarious. So, yeah, Fred was always funny. Who else besides Fred that's pretty funny? I was scared of Jeff for a long time. I was scared of him for a long time because I heard he was like real standoffish, but he's a nice guy to talk to. But yeah, Fred, Jabari, Jalen was a good one too. But yeah, it has to be Fred. It has to be Fred. Man, Fred be on my ass. That's it. That's crazy.
when we saw Fred, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, because I ran into him a couple weeks ago, and he told me about, you know, going out to Turkey and wanting to be there for Alperen and supporting him through. I think he's playing with Euro. I forgot the competition.
Yeah, Eurobasket. Yeah, he starts August 27th.
Yeah, so he's going to be there for that. And he really made it a point to, after, you know, committing your immediate future to this franchise, he really wanted to make it known that the young players that are under his care can really, like, bring it in terms of, like, looking up to him and wanting to be more of a leader, more of an impression on those guys, because obviously they're super talented. They're more talented than Fred is at the moment in terms of, like, skill set and projection, stuff like that. But as far as leadership, there's a reason why, you know, they went so hard after Fred. And yeah, he was the best available at the time on the market, and a lot of circumstances could have been different. But right now, he is exactly what they want in a floor general and a leader. And for him to go out there to Turkey, that was pretty big, because a lot of players in the summer, they want to chill, they want to relax, they want to be with their families, they want to, you know, take time off. But he made it a point to head out there and spend some time with the young fella. So I thought that was dope.
I think it is too. I want to give a shout out to Dylan Brooks. I believe he said earlier in the year he was going to fly out there to Turkey to be with Şengün as well. Obviously, not going to happen after the trade, but he was willing to. So shout out to him. But yeah, man, I really think Fred's an A-plus vet. Yeah. Kel, that was some good news. Someone's going to aggregate it. You know, he's going to be out there for Şengün at the Eurobasket. That's going to be a ton of fun for sure.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. You know, long offseason, we need some hoops. LP, it's going to be good to see him. Do you have anything else on the Şengün front shooting-wise? Earlier on the show, probably episode 2, you discussed, you know, he's been working on the 3-ball, you know, that he's been getting a lot more comfortable.
Yeah, I'm done with that. I don't want to get aggregated no more. Hey, let me tell y'all right now, I'm good. I said it. It's out there. It's there forever. Whatever he shoots next season, do not mention me. Don't add me nothing. Okay? This is summer work. You can clearly see that he's working on a 3-point shot. It's probably going to get better at some point. It's more of a mentality thing than a skill set thing, because we've seen how it looks whenever he shoots those balls and it goes in. He can shoot threes. It's just, you know, players of that skill set and size, they prefer to do their work more from the free throw line under. And LP is such a gifted post player with the footwork and everything that he doesn't want to shoot threes. Now, adding Kevin Durant changes a lot of things with the equation, because if you're looking at it from a basketball calculus standpoint, if you are able to shoot a trailer three, if you're able to pick and pop, you can open up so much more things in the playbook that are even more advantageous than sets. If you want to run 90 sets as opposed to a KD LP pick and pop, that might be unstoppable in the league next season. So I'm not saying he's going to be a sniper next season, because that takes years of work. But I will expect him to shoot, be more comfortable taking those threes, even if you're not converting all of them. As long as you can get up to, let's say, 32-33% for his position and skill set, I think they're a better team moving forward.
Yeah, that's smart on your front, Kelly. I kind of set you up last time, and I aggregated, and then people were like, "Nah, he was talking about Tay." I'm sorry, bro.
That was kamikaze. That was crazy. Yeah. That was good, though. That was good, though.
They start cutting up on
me. I love
the feedback. Throw, where is the question? Shetman had a great question. Yeah, 819. Throw that question on the jumbo.
Oh, I was going to click on it and say I'm not going to answer, but I definitely know.
No, I'm going to answer. It's 100% going to be one of Paolo or Jackson Gatlin. 100% one of those two. That's
why do you say that?
Because Paolo is so.
I think it's going to be that guy,
Jahari.
Block. No, the guy that, the LP guy. It's one of those Alpies.
Oh, I know. It starts with an S.
Yeah.
I know you're talking about.
I wish he blocked me.
He blocked me. Thank goodness.
Yeah, him. Well, actually, yeah. It might be one of y'all. I'm not going to lie.
Look, I keep my answers PR.
It's not a bad thing. Because, like, look, KD, and this goes back to what people don't understand. A lot of what KD does on Twitter or in real life is all about he wants to debate. He wants to talk. Like,
yeah,
he's trying to see how you think. He's trying to see how you operate. He's not necessarily trying to attack you. He just likes to talk basketball, mm-hmm. and he appreciates difference of opinions. Now, obviously, sometimes it gets a little out of control when fans say something crazy or, but people like you guys are smart people. So it's not going to be a, it's going to be a basketball. It will never be a personal attack on KD. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be based in basketball. So I think if he were to, you know, quote tweet you or mention you, it won't be coming from a place of hate. It'll be more coming from a place of, because if you ever go to his interactions, it never stops at the just the one quote. Because some people do that. They'll quote tweet you, they'll talk trash, and then that's it. But if you, he actually will engage if you have a good response, and he'll go back, and it's always been like that. So I think it might be one of you guys, and it might not be like a hate thing, mm-hmm. but it will definitely be like, let's talk basketball, why you think this way. And it probably will be about the rotation, stuff like that. If you're,
I'll say, when I said Jackson and Paolo, I did not mean it in like a negative way either. Like, I definitely meant, like, Paolo is very animated. And so I could see that kind of, like, that's how you got the Eric Gordon reaction.
Right.
And then
he texted Jackson, me that. Oh, I told y'all that story about.
Say it again.
Whenever he called me and said, can we cuss on this? I don't know if we can cuss.
But, go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
He said, who the fuck is buying Houston? He was so annoyed.
Bro, I was crying when you told me that.
He was so, but a lot of these guys be like out the loop. So like they be confused. It's not really like forget this guy, but they just be like trying to, you know, find that balance between interacting with fans and trying to be present on social media. So it'd be funny because I'd be forgetting that they're actual regular people too. Like they'd be mad, they'd be confused. So that was funny. But yeah, you know, it's not a personal thing if KD were to blast anybody. It's just, you know, who are the guys that say that, who are the most present online in Rockets Twitter? Yeah. There's y'all two, there's Paolo, there's Jackson, Roosh also. Actually, it might be Roosh. It might.
I know. No, yeah, it's gonna be Roosh. That's who it's gonna be. It's gonna be Roosh.
That's exactly who. Shout out to Roosh.
It might be Roosh.
He's gonna say something about Rip Hamilton film. Yeah, they're gonna get on him.
Yeah, I say Roosh will come on one day and say something about Larry Bird or something, and Katie's gonna take the
thing. Shout out to Roosh, man.
We'll all be watching.
I'll be excited though. He's definitely going to be in the community, so I'm interested to see, you know, who he gets in conversation with.
Yeah.
As I look for more comments, I want to give a shout out to our boy Dre. He got a really good conversation out of KD. He pulled up some film of him going against Ime Udoka, and Ime was kind of locking him a little bit. But yeah, that was a really good conversation that Dre got out of.
Yeah, KD, that sparked the whole interview with Ime in Summer League. So that was.
I've seen that. Yeah, that's crazy.
That was really good. Yeah. Shout out.
Man. They said KD said. Who the fuck is Bias Houston? Yo, that's hilarious, bro. All right, we're looking for more questions. As y'all are watching, if you haven't already, definitely like and subscribe. We just hit, as we mentioned, 1,000 subs. So appreciate y'all. We're going to keep growing. We got 150 in here right now. Much love, especially in the offseason when there is nothing to discuss. But shout out to the Josh Okogie signing today. Did Houston have any interest in Quinn Grimes before all the signings? I don't think so. Kelly, you can go ahead and answer that one.
So interest, they're interested in a lot of players. I do think he does fit what they needed for a long time. So he is from the area, all that stuff. But once you dive into the actual workings of what Quentin wants, you've seen how he's in a stalemate with the Sixers right now over money. He sees himself as a $25 million a year player. And, you know, if the market isn't there, you're kind of betting against yourself. We've seen that with Josh Giddey, with Jonathan Kuminga. Restricted free agency is the worst place to be for a young player. It really is. So, yes and no. Like, they had some interest, but it didn't really make sense once you talked about trying to get into a complicated sign-in trade. Then you have the whole thing with, you know, Daryl Morey and Houston's front office. Like, there's so many layers to deals that people don't understand in terms of these are still connections. Like, I'm not sure how much business those guys want to do with each other. I don't know. But, you know, Quentin is such a good player that it would definitely have helped Houston, but I think they're pretty fine with it right now, even without him. So, yeah.
I'll answer this question from Assad. Does Jeff Green ever touch the court? As Will said, if that ever happens, something has gone terribly wrong, or Houston is up by 30. So, yeah, I think those are the only scenarios we see Uncle Jeff. But Uncle Jeff was very efficient last year. I think he had like a 64 true shooting percentage, had a few really nice dunks. Shout out to Unk. But yeah, I don't really think he sees the floor in any serious minutes unless we have like an injury or it's a blowout.
Jeff Green had a 65 true shooting, Brad. You
know, it was 60. I knew it was above 64. That's crazy. Right, yeah.
That's actually incredible. At age, what, 30, what, 38?
37 last year when he was hooping. Yeah, 38 now.
He was 38 last season. He's going to be 39.
Oh, so he's going on to 39.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's crazy. Incredible. You got two players from the Supersonics on the same team. That makes no sense. It's the Houston staff.
They were in the same draft, were they?
Were they
in the same draft? Were they both 07?
Kelly, same draft. Me and Will, we was young boys.
Sure was. Pick off. I didn't know he went that high.
Yeah, Jeff Green was a dog coming out of.
I remember he had the heart problems and that kind of.
Yeah, that's
changed the trajectory of his career. But I did not know he was picked that high. Goodness,
I should know this. Where did he go to college, Uncle Jeff?
Wasn't it Georgetown? Yeah, Georgetown.
He sure did go to Georgetown.
Okay. Georgetown.
Yeah, shout out Uncle Jeff. I'm happy he's finishing in Houston. He went on par with someone this year. And he was like, I just want to retire in Houston. So I'm happy they actually got that done. Love him as of it. What star players that are not being talked about may become available this year? No clue. I have no clue.
Add Jaylen Brown. I think someone posted a picture of Boston's depth chart for next season and it looks horrendous. So I want to see, obviously, if you are Jaylen Brown and everything that was built around you is now gone in the span of 3 months, I wonder how much patience you have, for a quote unquote semi rebuild or whatever this is, what they're doing. I'm looking at guys like Jaylen Brown, guys like Giannis, maybe Donovan Mitchell still, if something comes up with that. But I think it's pretty, the market as we know it is changing. And I think, as y'all saw, this was a very dull free agency period. It wasn't a lot of firework. I think the biggest firework was, emotionally, was the Miles Turner going to Milwaukee, if that even counts as an explosion. But I don't think there'll be a lot of activity. I think you'll see more next summer whenever the cap rises, but it's pretty boring for now.
I was gonna say this. I thought this was a good question. Shangun, you had some spelling trouble earlier, so thank you for finally getting it right. But is the Houston coaching staff gonna be the same next year?
Yes,
to my knowledge, Kelly can confirm for sure.
Yeah, it's the same.
But
it's the same.
Yeah, as Vanessa has said, she got on me and Will's podcast and said this, the Rockets have a very young coaching staff and they're all active enough to jump in a drill like at that moment. And that helps these guys a ton. So the Rockets probably have one of the better coaching staffs in the league, especially Royal Ivy. He's amazing. I'm surprised. People did try to mooch him away from Houston, Memphis, and another team. I forget the other one off the top of my head. But, yeah, I'm very happy that he stayed. Obviously, he has that connection to KD as well. So, yeah, I'm actually very happy the Rockets kept that coach.
If anyone's ever, shaken Royal Ivy's hand, that is probably the most painful experience of my life. I do not understand it. It's actually insane.
I think I've given him a fist bump. I never had the handshake.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, close hand. very physical. So yeah, going back to what you said about the drills, those guys are still very active. They can still get in and get bumping. So it's good to have people that age and experience.
We're almost at the buzzer. If y'all have one more question at the shot clock, y'all can throw one in. But as we look for one more, I really have to thank you guys for tuning in. I didn't think we'd get 160 viewers at this part of the off season. So definitely much love. Again, if you're new, definitely subscribe, comment, let us know what you think about all the questions we have on the show. If you're watching after the fact, definitely join the live stream, throw in some questions, and we'll try to answer, especially this part of offseason. We really have nothing to talk about. So we will be answering any questions y'all have. Assad said we lost Tiago Splitter. That was last year, my guy. We lost Tiago last year. But now he's in Portland, or 2 years ago. Now he's in Portland.
Yeah.
But that's the only coaching staff guy we've lost since Ime came in. Is that right, Kelly? Yeah, I was sad we didn't get him back. But Someone said 24-hour streams. Yeah, we are not. Yeah, no, can't do that.
No,
I'm really good. Fun though. Couldn't do it. Yeah. Couldn't do it. But yeah, no. Nah, do y'all have anything else I want to mention? Kelly, Will.
That's enough. I'm working on a Fred thing, a big Fred thing. I sat down with them, so that's coming out probably sometime next month. But
nice.
That's it.
That's going to be like a podcast or like an article?
No, it's a feature, a big feature.
Nice. Article.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kelly, man. Yeah. Again, that was an episode. Or go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
Yes, I'll plug The Right Read. We got some episodes coming out.
Yeah, I saw that.
On Friday. Fire. So, yeah. Y'all make
very
sure
to dope set. Very dope set. I like that.
Yeah quality is excellent.
Yeah.
Let's say The Right Read on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. So,
yeah.
Yes, sir. Again, appreciate y'all for listening. We'll be back next week, same exact time every week. If you guys listen on our Apple, Spotify, wherever, it's going to be here. So appreciate you guys, and we'll be back soon.